Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Nothing has been easy or predictable over the last year as COVID-19 has created a new not-so-normal. For parents, the challenges include trying to balance working from home while also supervising remote schooling, figuring out how to explain to children and teenagers why they can't go on playdates or dates, and living with the social isolation that used to be filled by whatever and whomever your village might have included. For some families, access to social services has been a challenge. In-person supports that have kept families functioning and kids thriving are in many cases no longer there. Some families are struggling with a loss of income and difficulty supporting their food budget with the meals their kids used to get at school, even as school districts and communities work to bridge that gap. Foster parents and families that co-parent in different households have to navigate custody agreements and court orders that have added conversations about COVID exposure and protocol into what can already be strained conversations and relationships. We wanted to acknowledge how hard it's been for so many families today, and look specifically at the parenting side of things, maybe to give parents a chance to talk a little bit about what your experiences have been like and find a little sense of that shared community or village that you may have lost. It's also a chance to get some advice or tips for how to make things run more smoothly if you are tearing your hair out or really feeling challenged. We've invited three parents who have very different family situations to share their realities on the program today, but we're hoping to hear from many others of you out there as well. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by pediatric psychiatrist and author David Ratu, but first, let's talk with Allison Sawyer. Allison lives in Brandon and is a single mom to her three-year-old daughter. Allison, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
So, as I said, single mom to a three-year-old, where's your daughter right now?
One of my coworkers actually tested positive for COVID, so I'm quarantining with my daughter. So she is watching TV and eating snacks and hopefully will not come into the bedroom.
Of any show, it would be fine if this was the one that she came into the bedroom for. So don't worry about that.
This is true. So we are quarantining because at this point she would go to her father's, but we figured out the coworker tested positive before she went there. So in order to keep him safe, she's staying with me.
That must be so hard.
Yeah. Going to work was really my only only socialization. So that was like a heavy hit, but it is nice to have some extra time with her because we split our time pretty equally. So it's nice to have some extra time, but little nerve-wracking.
Yeah. And at that sort of added challenge of the flux with parenting and co-parenting and moving from one family to another.
Right. At 10 p.m. at night, I was like, I don't think I could send her to your house. I just found out my coworker is positive for COVID. What do you think?
Oh, man.
And I woke up like not knowing the answer yet. So, yeah. That's been a little tough. But luckily, we are on a really good co-parenting relationship, and we are on the same page as far as COVID goes. So that's been extremely helpful.
Do you have advice for other people who are trying to navigate those kinds of co-parenting situations? And some of them may be in new co-parenting situations, new sort of splitting the household up, because it's been a challenging time for many marriages as well. How would you advise people to do that?
Yeah, I mean, so the first several months after we split was rough, as I think anyone's is going to be, especially during a pandemic. But for us, we had formed the co-parenting. I mean, at the beginning, it was our daughter is the most important thing right now. And even though we might not like each other, she is like her happiness is key. And we both are very understanding that she can feel our emotions, see our emotions, hear what we think. So it just turned into I can't be mad at you. And we just need to do what's best for Nora. So I would say that even though there's bad blood or whatever, try your hardest to just think about what the child's going through, what the child's seeing. And then as far as COVID goes, I mean, I think just safety is key in our household. It's listen to the guidelines, do everything you can not to get COVID. We're both very concerned about it, especially for our daughter's sake. So I don't have a ton of advice. I think I told the person who question me earlier, like, I might not be the best person for this. we made out pretty lucky in all things besides mental health. But I kept my job. My daughter's not in school yet, so I did not have to figure out that struggle. But yeah, I just think putting your child first would be my advice.
Well, you know, Allison, you mentioned, you said you came out pretty well because you still have a job, you know, so you feel like you have this steady income and you have a lot of other things that are going okay. But mental health is an area that is so challenging for so many people. And you said that's a challenge for you. How have you tried to manage that under such challenging circumstances when you're also, you know, parenting a 3-year-old and trying to navigate that relationship?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always thought I was an introvert, but since the pandemic, I realized maybe that's not true. We would go out once a day, just about every, when I would have my child, we would go out every single day to a playgroup or a friend's house or coffee with a friend or just something to see someone and get out of like our area. And so since losing that this spring, that's been the hardest hit for us, especially our really good friends who were like family. So that has been the hardest part, is just how isolating it is. I've always dealt with depression and anxiety. So I like was seeing a counselor before this started. So that was really helpful, I think. And I've just tried to see her more often now because that helps just seeing someone. It's obviously telemed. But yeah, I mean, so we try to get outside often. That helps a lot. Certain outdoor activities are harder, though, as a single mom, or at least for me, because I'm pretty anxious about things. So we don't go for hikes alone. That was always a friend activity. So that's been really hard this winter, like not being able to go on hikes or anything. And then just trying to wrangle a child like at the ice skating rink or something, or convince them that it's fun when you're the only one doing it and not the other parent, has proven to be a challenge that I didn't think I'd be facing. But yeah, so we do a lot of video calls with our family. We do visit. My mom is a trooper and she comes out in the -8 weather, and we do an outdoor with masks spaced play date with Nora. So yeah, just trying to see people at a distance and talking to my counselor. And then the biggest thing is just knowing that this is not forever. Like, there will be an end someday, even if it's in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. We got a note from Coco in Lincoln, who has a 2-year-old, and I think it might resonate with you, Allison. So I'll read a little bit of what Coco writes. She says, I think the challenges of this year will have a major impact on my experiences and memories of my daughter's toddlerhood. The disappearance of the informal support for parents of young kids has been particularly challenging. With no library story times, play dates, mm-hmm. trips to a children's museum, time with grandparents, parenting has felt exceptionally lonely and isolating. It's those moments of understanding between parents, watching our kids grow and learn together, that I've been especially missing this winter. And we don't get the toddler years back, so I think this is something I will grieve for a long time. I've deeply missed seeing my friends' kids grow and the connections with other parents and the sharing of knowledge and experiences. Those are aspects of togetherness that I just haven't been able to accomplish over Zoom with a toddler in tow. So I cannot wait for story time, music class, and play dates, and will forever recognize the value of those connections for kids and parents alike.
Yeah, that's exactly it. and yeah, even the other friends grow is so true. Our friends that are like family to us, they have a 6-month or 6-week old. And every time they send me pictures, I just get so sad that I can't be in their life at this stage when I have been with their other kids. So, yeah. And then Zoom with kids is just impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I feel you on that.
It's just more painful than it's worth. So
do you talk to Nora about the pandemic or about why her social interactions might have changed?
Yes, absolutely. So from the start, like from March, we've always been very honest and open with her about anything. So, she's very well of death and being sick and all of that. So that made it a little bit easier. And then, so once the virus kind of became a really big pandemic, we just talked about, we're going to be wearing these masks now. And I told her exactly why. The sick air particles go into your mouth and they make you sick.
And here she is, I think. Yeah.
you want another show? Okay. Yeah. And so we live in an apartment building with 16 other units. So we started wearing our masks in the building when we're just going outside, and no one else does. And so that was confusing at first, but I just explained to her, everyone takes different risks. So yeah, we have all, I think it's very helpful that we've been so honest with her from the start that she just figured it out really quickly. And now, I mean, even weeks later, a person would come up to her and she would just back right up, like, what are you doing? Get away from me. Which on one hand, I'm really happy she's so concerned and careful, but I do worry this is doing something to her brain of like being near people or being close to people. And also just like that other person said, just not being able to be with people must be doing something to her. Makes me nervous. But yeah, so as far as talking to her about it, we just have explained it very clearly, just not in scientific terms.
Is there anything, Allison, that has felt surprisingly good or that, you know, that you would want to preserve even post-pandemic?
No. So it has really, I struggle with like anxiety around being somewhere and rushing us out of the house. And so that has been, it's really taught me that even if, like, even a play date, but you don't have to be there on time, but I felt like I need to see my friends. And so just no rush anywhere has been really nice. And it's helped me realize that when there is time to be going places again, I have these tools now and I know how to stay calm. So yeah. And then, I mean, it's just been wonderful having extra time with her, not going to play groups and rushing around, but it is isolating as well. So it's been a nice growth for us, and it's helped me realize that, or helped me kind of figure out how to control when I'm feeling really anxious and stressed.
Well, Allison, I'm going to let you go choose another show for Nora. And I really appreciate both of you giving us the time today for you to tell us a little bit about your experiences. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me, Jane.
Yeah. Good luck. That's Allison Sawyer, who lives in Brandon with her 3-year-old daughter, Nora. We got a note from Lisa, who talks about college age kids and said, for many parents, the pandemic meant that college age and other young adult children came home to the nest for a period of time. We needed to consciously create a new form of living together as a loving family, but of adults who wanted to go back to old roles of parents and children. Likewise, how demoralizing it could have become for the children to slip back into patterns from their childhood from which they had worked so hard to emerge. Without knowing it, I think many families just went through a great, if unseen, social experiment. Our family did great. We overtly talked about it all, and life together was mostly wonderful. I feel guilty to say that I will always treasure those months stolen out of time. And joining us now to help us guide this conversation forward for the rest of the hour is Dr. David Ritu. Dr. Ritu is an associate professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at the University of Vermont's Larner College of Medicine, and he's medical director for the child division of the Vermont Department of Mental Health. Also, maybe not coincidentally, but kind of coincidentally, he has a new book that just came out called Parenting Made Complicated: What Science Really Knows About the Greatest Debates of Early Childhood. Dr. Ritu, nice to have you with us again. Thanks for being here.
It's so nice to be back, Jane.
You know, Allison was saying her daughter is really great about backing away from people to make sure that she has that 6-foot distance or more, to make sure she's taking the precautions that are necessary to prevent contracting COVID-19. But then Allison says it's also this sort of double-edged sword of wondering, is this doing damage to how she's going to have social interactions moving forward, given that she's just a 3-year-old? What do you think? Is that something that parents should be thinking about as they move forward?
Well, she brought up so many great points, and I think I can be somewhat reassuring that as much as it's good to try to reach out and connect as any way you can with other kids, for a 3-year-old and younger kids, the most important relationship they're going to have and the most important relationship they have in terms of their development is with their parents. And so if that is rich and there's a lot of interactions, I think you don't need to worry too much that they're going to miss out or be developmentally behind because they're not interacting with kids face to face as much as they might normally do.
So we don't have to worry about a lack of socialization for small children in particular?
I don't think so. Again, I think it's good to try if you can figure out a way to make it work. I think it's healthy and it's great to do, but I don't think parents need to be stressing about this in addition to all the other things that we are all stressing about already.
What about for parents of teenagers, though? I mean, that lack of social interaction and in-person friendship for many people who are preteens and teens is such a crucial part of that stage of life. And we know that a lot of teenagers are saying they're struggling with not being in school, not being with their friends and their peer groups. Is that something that you're seeing for teenagers?
I am seeing that, and I agree. I think that's the age group that many of us have the most concern about, because you have to think about what we are asking adolescents and younger teens to do, and it's very anti-developmental in some way. So we're asking these kids not to interact with each other. We're asking them to stay at home, and adolescence is really a period about really developing those relationship with other peers and taking steps towards more responsibility and more independence. So the guidance, as important as it is, in some ways working against that. And we have to try to figure out some ways around that to still try to encourage those very appropriate things that they need to do.
What would you suggest?
Well, there's other ways to help grow independence. So if it's not as much sort of in person, maybe there are other things. There are new skills. There are tasks. There are jobs that might help develop some of those things. And then to encourage, creativity in trying to be able to reach out and be socially interactive as much as possible. There are a lot of opportunities out there. Technology is really helping. It's not a replacement, but it can make a big difference, and I would encourage those things rather than isolating at home.
Can we just talk over, and while we're talking about teenagers, warning signs that parents and adults should be on the lookout for if their older children, in particular teenagers, might be struggling and might not be saying anything explicit to their adults?
Sure. Well, there are a lot of warning signs, and many of them are pretty nonspecific. So you can't say, oh, they're doing this, so that equals that. Mm-hmm. But some of the things I would be looking out for is if normal activities that somebody likes to do just loses its appeal. So if you have a kid who likes to cross-country ski or likes to talk on on the phone, and all of a sudden all of those things are losing their they're losing their enthusiasm for those things, that could be a sign that things are getting a little worse. And then you always have to sort of take statements that might be said seriously. If someone's making very hopeless claims or even talk about hurting themselves or others, that needs to be, talked about a lot more.
What about for younger kids? It can be hard to know, especially with kids who are not have words, maybe they're, 3 or 4 or 5, but maybe don't have the ability to fully articulate their feelings or what they're expressing and when you should take it seriously. I mean, I found a post-it note from my now 7-year-old a few weeks ago that said, "I am so sad." And I thought, oh my God. And then I said, what are you sad about? And he said, "Oh, I'm sad because you won't let me watch my tablet right now." I was like, well, okay, that's not something I need to worry about. But, how do you know with smaller children, younger children, when there are things that you need to be addressing?
Oh, well, in some ways, I think you answered your own question by what you did. You asked, right? So rather than just leaving it there or assuming you knew what was meant, you dove in a little deeper. You asked what it meant and you found out. And then that really helped steer you in the direction that you needed to go. And while it sounds simple, I think that's really a lot of the key to name it, to empathize with the feelings, because these are genuine feelings, and then try to listen and figure out what really may be behind it.
It can be so hard, I think, too, for parents, especially now, to know what's a normal developmental tantrum or anger at a parent versus what may be impacted by all of these challenging circumstances that we're going through with the pandemic? You know, are your kids having more tantrums because they're socially isolated and schooling is different and home life feels different? Or are they having tantrums because they're, you know, 3 and 9? And so, you know, how to sort of arrange it in your own head to try to figure out what is normal.
Yes, and this dilemma is playing out on a wider scale, too, because people are noticing that kids in general seem to have high levels of anxiety and some depression, and we're wondering how much of this can we blame on the pandemic. We knew that some of these things were on the rise before the pandemic, so this is, you know, playing out on a much larger scale as well.
Eliza wrote in to talk about parenting teens and support and says talking with other parents is super helpful. Hannah's house in Waitsfield is hosting a parent check-in. It's so helpful to have space to share concerns and talk with other parents. I have teens who are doing very well, but it is really challenging. The increase in screen time is a conflict, as it is how kids connect with their friends. And Ruth says, single mom with full custody of my 3. There has certainly been benefits, too, that I'm working to figure out how to apply when things are normal. With kids who are very active in sports and activities, we previously spent a lot of time rushing around. With almost everything canceled, the togetherness and some increase in simplicity has been beneficial. We're lucky to be healthy and financially stable and able to appreciate this. However, the developmental effects of so much less socialization may reveal themselves later. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking about parenting during the pandemic and hearing from Vermonters about what's been challenging and some of what's been rewarding during this unprecedented time. Dr. David Ratu, who's been exploring what science tells us about things like screen time and child mental health, is with us today and can help answer questions you might have. Jeannie tweets, challenges, lack of social interaction for kids, lack of a break for me. Triumphs, virtually connecting to friends around the country in ways we never thought of before and on a more regular basis. Jenna in Burlington writes, in the midst of this pandemic, I became a single parent. Because of the circumstances of this change, I have not felt comfortable taking the risk of any family member contracting COVID. So although childcare has opened up for some, it's not been an option for my family. For a while, I had a friend helping with childcare, and that was okay while Vermont's numbers were down. But now with tighter restrictions on multifamily contacts, the new variants emerging and coming our way, and so many things about the long-term impacts of the virus itself being unclear, we are even more isolated. Fortunately for me, I also have older children that I can rely on and still go to work part-time. But it is a strain on them while they're isolated and trying to navigate online school themselves. My youngest is 4 and is living her best life. She's happy to be home and the center of attention, but we are all wearing thin. And Jenna also notes that paying for childcare has been really difficult because she used to get a subsidy when she was in this childcare center, but she lost that access to that subsidy when she unenrolled from the center. Christina says, I had my second child in February, and not long after the pandemic hit the U.S., it was a mix of emotions for us as a family because we were very sad not to be able to share our new baby with our family that all live hours away. But as an immediate family unit, we got to bond in a way that probably wasn't going to be possible any other way. We're starting to hit pandemic fatigue, hoping things start to shift this summer. And let's bring in another parent voice. Marlon Fisher is dad to 2 boys, and he's also treasurer of Dad Guild, a nonprofit organization in Vermont that acts as a support network for fathers. Marlon, it's a pleasure to have you on Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Can you just explain what Dad Guild is? Who can join? What do you do? What is it?
Yep. So Dad Guild is a community. It's a community of fathers or non-birthing parents, which was when we became a nonprofit about 2 years ago. And we started off as like just having play groups and connecting with fathers. It's just a community for men and, like I said, non-birthing parents to connect and be vulnerable and learn from each other and support each other. And that's the baseline.
Has it still been helpful even now through the pandemic when you can't gather together in person?
Yeah, I think the pandemic has brought a lot of that closer together through social media. We use an app called Marco Polo. We have 25 dads who are constantly communicating through that, and we communicate everything from, you know, cooking tips to parenting tips, you know, household tips, if anyone needs a jump start, something like that. And we host a weekly Zoom meeting, check-in. We also host a bi-weekly anti-racism group. So we've been able to sort of generate a lot of community around that, around the pandemic. It's been good for a lot of dads.
What have you been hearing from other dads and other non-birthing parents about the challenges of parenting through the last year?
Yeah, so some of the challenges are working from home, lack of childcare, trying to navigate the world of having your children home and working at the same time, the difficulties around that. Even connecting with your partner and connecting with your partner, work, everything along those lines. So,
what's it been like for you? You've got two boys, yeah?
Yeah, I have two boys, a 4.5-year-old and a 3-year-old next week. So, it's been interesting. You know, I'm a black dad, so this year has been really interesting in terms of trying to raise my boys. So luckily, I have a very supportive partner, and you know, in the beginning of the pandemic, there was no school. I tried to make sure that they continue that social aspect and connect with their friends. So I would throw them in the car and sort of drive to our friends' driveways away from the car so that they can maintain those friendships. But it's been, you know, luckily I've had established a good support network of friends and other, not only dad guild, but black dads here in Chittenden County, which has been really good for the boys to see and connect with and sort of learn about themselves a little more.
How has that gone when you're trying to address issues of racism and racial justice and your own family's experience with that while also having to deal with a pandemic where you can't as easily get together with people, but then also, you know, questions about protesting and public gathering and how to do that safely? How do you navigate all those sort of disparate threads which come together at this time, this sort of unique time?
Yeah. How do you navigate it? What's been important, what's been really helpful for me is being able to talk about it with other people who have similar experiences. When it comes to my children, my boys, I'm very transparent with them and let them know what's going on. More recently on, you know, January 6th, I had a lot of emotions going on, a lot of emotions happening. And, you know, my 4-year-old, like most kids do, they pick up on that really quickly. And he was like, "Daddy, what's wrong? Don't be sad. Don't be mad." And I explained to him why I was angry or why I was feeling sad. And I think it's really, that's how I've navigated it, is just being honest and vulnerable to people, my friends, my family. And that's been really helpful.
I don't know what your situation was like before the pandemic in terms of having time away from your kids, but I wonder if your kids are seeing more of your emotions now because so many families are together so much of the time, and that, you know, that might be uncomfortable, but also could be really good for your kids to see all of that and to talk through it.
It really is. It really is. My family's been very fortunate in the fact that we've been able to maintain employment. We've kind of kept it normal for the boys. You know, they've both been in school during this time, unlike some of many people who are suffering because of the pandemic. So they are. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. So that's been really helpful. It's like we've kind of normalized it, and nothing's really changed much for us. And we talk, and the boys know, like, 6-foot distance. They realize COVID is a thing, and how that's changed our lives.
You know, you mentioned that for you, you've had a lot of conversations as a black dad and raising two sons about racism, about what's happening in this country, about January 6th even. I understand Dad Guild is also shifting focus a little bit, too, to really work on issues of racial inequality and privilege and power. How are you doing that work?
Yep. So right now, as I mentioned earlier, since the summer, I think after the summer, we launched a biweekly anti-racism group where dads get together and we look at materials, books, listen to podcasts, and we have discussions on how to be active in the community and making change in the social justice and racial justice world. We've also recently, the board has come together and we started a campaign around being advocates and getting our voices in legislature, being heard, father's voices heard in legislature and in other parenting groups and organizations, so that, you know, we can really be a voice of change, or start that voice of change.
Can I just ask you before we let you go, Marlon, you mentioned that your younger child is having a birthday next week. Is he turning 4? Is that right?
Oh, he's turning 3.
He's turning 3. Okay, so how are you navigating pandemic birthday? Because it seems like every kid is getting at least one pandemic birthday.
Yep, so he is going to get a very special Dyson vacuum birthday cake. He's been asking for a vacuum cake the entire time. And so we're going to have like a little party and, you know, invite some friends and family via Zoom and do a little celebration. But yeah, that's the only way to do it these days. I'm really excited, looking forward to the vacuum cake. So
I want to see a picture of that too. I'm in solidarity with you on that. I had a vacuum kid who was the best present he ever got was when he got a fake vacuum. So I understand how that works.
Right.
Thank you so much for talking with us, and good luck.
Thank you.
That's Marlon Fisher, who has 2 kids and a birthday coming up. He's also treasurer of Dad Guild, which is a nonprofit organization in Vermont that acts as a support network for dads. Anna from Middlesex says, trying to supervise and coordinate remote schooling and maintaining my employment at the same time last spring was ugly. I lost my cool on many occasions and felt overwhelmed and desperate most days. We survived it, and I hope we don't have to go back to remote schooling, but I know many are still struggling with this. I'm so grateful that my kids can now be back in school and feel incredibly grateful to our local community for staying safe so our kids can be in school. Isolation, mental health complications, and missed traditions have been very hard for our family, but the school closures and impact that has had on our jobs and relationships have been the hardest part of pandemic parenting. Dr. Ratu, you're still with us. You know, when it comes to maintaining adult mental health and what to tell your kids about your own mental health struggles or your own challenges as adults move through this pandemic, do you have advice for how we should think about what our kids may be seeing that we're not saying, and then what we should be saying if we're struggling with these things?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the guests have brought up that there is this really important link between an adult, a parent's mental health and their child's mental health for a whole variety of reasons. And, you know, may not be shocked when I say that, you know, there's some moderation in the answer, but I feel like parents definitely should be able to express their feelings. It's okay to show that they're stressed. But at the same time, you know, people need to take care of their own mental health. And if it feels like it's getting excessive, if you're finding that you're saying things that may be alarming or scaring your kids, it's important to maybe dial back a little bit and get your own support and get the help that you need, because, you know, the mental health of your child depends to a degree on your own mental health.
I've heard a lot of parents saying they're doing more yelling and they feel a lot of guilt about that. I would never admit to yelling, of course, but that can be so challenging if you do feel like you're doing more yelling or you're not as good a parent or you're distracted because you're trying to work and, you know, monitor schooling and you're never by yourself, you know, and so the stress of that can really cause a lot of tension. I mean, it seems like maybe parents also need to give themselves a little bit of a break, cut themselves some slack.
Absolutely. I mean, the last thing parents need right now, trying to juggle so many things and being pulled in so many different directions, is a lot of judgment when they make mistakes. So I think we do best when we, you know, forgive ourselves, know that we're imperfect, know that this is a hard time, but just try to objectively, you know, be able to recognize times that maybe we're not at our best and try to make an improvement.
Are you able to do that? I mean, that's one thing to say academically. It's another thing to internalize and do yourself. You're a parent.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm a parent of 3. And, you know, people ask me some version of this question all the time. And I make every mistake that any other parent makes. I'm just more acutely aware of those, perhaps because of my training.
Today, we're hearing from Vermonters about what it's been like to be a parent during the COVID-19 pandemic. With us this hour is Dr. David Ratu, an associate professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at UVM and medical director at the Vermont Department of Mental Health, a medical director. We're getting notes from Vermonters sharing their experiences. Megan in Norwich says, I'm a foster parent to a 19-month-old who I've been fostering since he was 3 days old, and I'm a full-time teacher. I'm also a single foster parent, so I do it all. One thing that's particularly challenging as a foster parent, and triply so during this pandemic, is the feeling of lack of control over who your child comes in contact with. My foster child has weekly visits with his biological parents, plus different people from DCF and Easter Seals transporting him to visits while I'm at work, and yet still different people supervising the visits. My foster son is exposed to many different people each week, some of whom I've never met. I have no choice but to go along with all of this despite my protestations. I feel envious of parents with their own biological children who can control who their child is exposed to during this pandemic. And Karen, who works with us here at VPR, says, one additional stress I'm facing as a parent is being one of the few parents in my children's, mostly teens, circle of friends that is abiding by the governor's orders and therefore saying no when their friends keep asking them to hang out at their house or have a sleepover. It's confusing for our children to see so many of their friends experiencing these, quote, privileges while we are faithfully trying to abide by the restrictions. It can make for some very stressful arguments with teenagers. Oh, boy. Yeah, I imagine. And let's talk about the other end of the spectrum here with Amanda Schroth. Amanda gave birth to a daughter in May and is also parent to her eight-year-old stepson. Hi, Amanda. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
And congratulations on the birth of your daughter. What was that like in May when things were still, you know, in flux with hospital visits and who could be there with you and how that all went?
Yeah, I think in terms of our visits personally, in terms of seeing the doctors and the checkups, it wasn't much of a change for us. But one thing that turned out to be kind of a disappointment was just like I didn't get things like going down to Connecticut to see my family and have a baby shower that was done virtually. And then, you know, at the hospital, it was just me and my partner. We never got to have that experience of my stepson coming in to meet his little sister. But one of the interesting things that was reported to me by the nurses was, you know, they're having mothers, especially those who had C-sections, recovering a lot faster because when the nurses came in to have me walk, there was no one visiting, so they didn't have to come back at another time. So it was like they were able to keep me on that schedule that's ideal for recovering. But there is that that sadness of just not having the visitors like I was expecting. All of my family lives out of state, so that was hard.
And what about now? I mean, it can be wonderful to be in that sort of cocoon with a newborn where you feel like it's just the two of you or maybe an expanded family unit. But it can also be really hard not to be able to have that support, that in-person support network, especially when you're recovering and tired and hormonal and have a new baby.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was definitely it was a hard time. I think being able to be home was on its own a little bit of a relief because I was going to be home anyways. And not having that outside support in most cases, I think, was definitely very difficult. I've had so much experience with infants. I understand their development. That's what my background and work is in. So I had that background information. If I was going into this brand new, I think that would have been a lot harder. And my partner, we work opposite schedules, so he's up during the nights anyways with her. So I think they always talk about how important sleep is, especially for new parents. And I was definitely, like, we were blessed enough that both of us were getting the sleep we needed in the early stages. And, you know, I think the hardest part for me, I mean, I remember crying driving down to the grocery store the first day, like the first time I had to like leave the house, because it really was, I had not left that house for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks because I had to recover from the C-section. And so I cried on my way to the grocery store to go get groceries for her and for the family because I didn't want to leave her. And I think having that extra isolation really impacted that distance away from her. Because mm-hmm. I was the only one holding her, and besides my partner and her brother.
You mentioned that your partner works nights, which can be really great in the sense that he can help out when, you know, your baby wakes up in the middle of the night. But it also means for you that you're doing a lot of this parenting solo for your baby and your 8-year-old stepson. And so how is that going in terms of, you know, trying to sort of parent and be on opposite schedules with your partner?
It's definitely been a challenge. It's taken a lot of coming back to, is this still working? What do we need to change? What do we need to do more of? And yeah, it's definitely been hard for both of us. And I think he feels some guilt because he needs to sleep during most of the day. And now that I'm working from home, you know, I need him during the day to be awake sometimes to be with clients. And so it's definitely a lot of back and forth. I think we're really working on like a day-to-day basis at this point. So like, these are the times that I need you tomorrow. Is this okay? Does this work? And it's like a yes, this works, or a no, we need to switch it around.
Yeah, that sounds really challenging. And I don't know, you know, about the size of your home, but that can also be hard when somebody's trying to sleep and other people are awake to try to navigate how for the awake people, how you can sort of feel like you're having a normal life while also trying to protect the sleep of the person who needs their sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sleep is tied in so much to like mental health that it's definitely an important thing that we make sure that each of us is getting as much as we can. I think we're having a lot of broken up sleep, though, unfortunately, trying to make this work.
I understand one silver lining, though, was that the COVID stimulus checks that came through allowed you to take more parental leave than you were expecting to be able to take.
Yeah. I think, you know, I was the pregnant woman going in being like, oh, I'll do the six weeks, you know, half of the maternity leave. I'll be fine. I'll be ready to go to week and work when the 6 weeks is over. But the minute I had her, I had this instant dread of like, I already am dreading going back to work at 6 weeks, especially in the middle of the pandemic. I worked in a daycare at the time, so all the daycares were closed. And I think if I had gone back initially at 6 weeks, the daycares would have only been open for about a week. And so I was getting very anxious about that. So getting that stimulus check, I was able to have that freedom to say, I want that full 12 weeks that I'm given as a parent. And so that made it a lot less stressful. It gave me way more time in the beginning with my daughter to be at home and to be home with my stepson as well. So it was just such a good silver lining for me. I know it wasn't this pandemic wasn't a great situation for most people, and we've definitely felt its effects, but we've gotten some little blessings out of it for our family.
Well, congratulations again on your new baby and on making it through this past year, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
That's Amanda Schroth, who parents an infant and an 8-year-old and lives in Burlington. Dr. Ritu, one thing I want to ask you about that we've touched on in several different conversations, although not with Amanda, but haven't really zeroed in on, is a question of screen time. And this is something that you talk about in your new book, Parenting Made Complicated. But it's compounded or changed, I think, a little bit in some ways by the pandemic, because there are sort of best practices, best guidelines for how much screen time a child should have. And then there's parenting in a pandemic, when your child may be on the screen because they're doing school learning, or they may be on a screen because you need to work and they need to be quiet, or they may be on a screen because you just don't have the capacity to help out right now, and that's just the situation that there is. So how can people navigate this question of what should be happening and what is happening and where maybe a middle ground is?
Sure, you're right. Screens is a hugely controversial topic, and I think this is an area that really screams for some moderation and some it depends thinking. You know, it seems like if you look on the internet, you're sort of pushed to be in one camp or the other, with one camp being, you know, screens are evil, you should do everything you can to delay them for as long as you can. And then there's the camp of, hey, this is a digital age, this is no big deal, the research is flawed, don't worry about it. And really, I think the truth is somewhere in between. As I said before, parents, I don't think should be feeling guilty if during the pandemic their childs are watching an extra episode of SpongeBob. But at the same time, we do know that excessive screen time can come at a cost. And so I think parents shouldn't be completely giving up and throwing in the towel either, and to try to take an objective look at how much screen use is happening, what, if possible, can be done to try to find a few alternatives, and then do your best, because this is a really hard time. And sometimes there are times that we come through, and sometimes there are times that we get by. And I think the pandemic is often more of the latter.
There's so many threads to pull, and, you know, and it's impossible to get at them all. But are there other things that are on your mind that you just think either parents should be thinking about, or people who aren't parents should be understanding about what is happening right now with kids and families?
I think another area we haven't talked about, just to touch on briefly, is one thing I'm really worried about is the achievement gap right now. We've had a big achievement gap before the pandemic with kids. And one of my worries is that as kids, you know, reenter school in person, that we are going to see this gap widening even further. I know our educators are aware of this and trying to do their best about it.
For sort of all kinds of kids, for kids in poverty, for kids who usually get school-based developmental support and other kinds of therapy, I mean, all of the above?
All of the above. I think some kids are doing great and even accelerating their learning through the pandemic, and others are just struggling. And when they all come back into the same place, I think we're going to see a really wide gap, and that's going to have an effect on mental health downstream.
Yeah, it does seem like this pandemic is really widening inequity and inequality in all kinds of systems in this country.
Yes, absolutely. I'd agree.
Well, on that happy note, Dr. David Ratu is an associate professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at the University of Vermont's Larner School of Medicine, and he's medical director for the child division of the Vermont Department of Mental Health. His new book has just come out. It's called Parenting Made Complicated: What Science Really Knows About the Greatest Debates of Early Childhood. Dr. Ratu, always a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you for sharing your knowledge today.
Thank you for having me on.